Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for yet another installment of the Wise Women Media Radio Show. We have a special guest that will be with us tonight. Her name is Dori Bahn. She's an independent consultant, sustainable agriculture, and food security expert. She's got a lot to say, especially a week before, or right before the International Day of Action against Monsanto, which is happening all over the country and in foreign countries as well. So I did want to give a shout-out to our sponsors, which are Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, of course, our network, Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodoo blog. Also, for anybody just checking us out for the first time, you can find us online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. And be sure you hit us up at the GoFundMe link. I did note that we are trying to stay on the air every week, and this is seed money to fund independent media since we take no corporate donations. So if you hit us up at the GoFundMe link, no amount is too small. So dig deep. Give helps us come back every Friday night and do a show. So this platform does belong to you. I wanted to open us up with a great song from one of my favorite musicians. She's out of California. She really does what I call ethereal music. It's not exactly new age. It's very timely. Her lyrics are very thought-provoking. Her name is Tina Malia, and the song is Heal This Land. This came off of her album, The Silent Awakening, some years back. Enjoy this. And that was Teen Amalia from her album, The Silent Awakening, Heal This Land. And Dori, do I have you on the line with me?
I'm here. Hi, Anita.
Hi. Thank you for being on the show tonight. So that song is one of my favorites. It makes me think of the Mother Goddess, and she speaks of the earth being her body. And I thought, wow, that's kind of a fitting song for what we're going to be discussing tonight. So, Dori, tell us tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you actually got started gardening. I know you have quite an extensive resume as far as your education, but fill us in on all that, and then we can get to the topics that are of importance to a lot of people, especially since the Monsanto marches are happening next year.
I first want to thank you very much for inviting me on. I appreciate that a lot, Anita. And enjoy you a lot in community. Do so much for everybody.
Oh, thank you. I try hard. But so do you. You do a lot. And it's kind of like we were talking about that earlier, how I felt, you know, as I got older into my cronedom that, you know, I would be settling down more. And it seems like there's more of a urge to stay busy.
Yeah. There's almost a level of urgency to do a lot. And because we see things happen, the younger ones probably don't see the signs of the times like we do. And so, therefore, it's time for us to step forward and share. But in my background, I have a certificate in horticulture, and I've worked for many years along with scientists and chemists on soil biology, and it's all about the soil, building sustainable living soils. Most people don't think of the soils. In fact, we know more about our galaxies above than we do the soil beneath our feet. And it's only been recent years, I'll use Elaine Ingram, for example, out in Oregon. She owns a company called Oregon Tilth, who enlightened everybody of the life forms that are going on beneath our soil. It's so interconnected, and there's so much intelligence under our feet. We are only pioneers now discovering what is going on. And just recently, an article just came out in throughout the internet and newspapers on the intelligence of fungus. One will correspond under the soil that an insect atop of the plant is biting a plant, and tell the whole, if you will, food web what's going on, and there's an actual secretion of a pesticide naturally made by that specific plant to get rid of the insects. For example, a dandelion in a field will be cut by a lawnmower, and the whole field suddenly will lay down and miss that lawnmower's blade. And within a half an hour, they'll rise back to doing their thing as a dandelion would. But I don't want to go too far-fetched out there. It just sounds a little bit eerie science. But it's scientific-based, what I just said, and you can certainly check it. But my job is more than gardening. I'm a crop advisor. I deal with in Oman. I deal with crops in India only recently, coming back with some testings on our development in soils and during drought. I help produce grain in Canada, canola, and of course I work with a team of scientists along with that. My job is identifying plant and then educating on soil and how to build proper sustainable soils.
And, of course, you were one of the first people in this area that were pioneering localism before it became trendy.
Yeah.
That's how I heard your name before I actually met you. We already have a caller on the line. Let me go ahead and bring them on the line. They perhaps have a question for you. Hang on just a second. 813, thank you for calling in. And what's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh,
this would be 813 area code.
Hello, it's me, Beth.
Oh, hi, Beth. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just half asleep. I'm going to be going to bed soon.
Beth, are you actually doing any growing right now? Do you have any questions for Dory?
I'm in an apartment with very limited space, so I haven't been able to grow anything.
Bet you Dory has the solution for that. And I know exactly what she's going to talk about. Dory, I'm going to give you the floor about talking about vertical growing.
There is vertical growing that's for urban gardeners. You can put it right on your back porch. There's stacks of pots, one tier after another. Each pot has a quad, four areas where you can grow. You can do an abundance of growing right in your backyard, and you can actually pick salads daily or herbs from your garden, depending on how big your space is. But even in a 10-by-10 area, you can feed yourself. And with an abundance, tomatoes at the right time. Of course, you have to go with the seasons, but there's an abundance of food you can grow right on a little porch step. If you have a backyard, you can seriously grow enough food to feed yourself, your family, and your neighbors.
Well, I don't have a backyard, but my mother does, so, you know.
I encourage you to try your hand at it, at container gardening or vertical gardening. Very easy. There's not a lot of work involved as far as stooping. Once you got your soil set, I always encourage soil and not other types of medium because it's the natural way of growing. And there's steps on doing that. If you want to email me, I can certainly give you guidelines on that and times of year for growing. And it's Dory, D-O-R-I-E, Bon, B-O-N, at gmail.com. And I'm happy to share with you.
Great.
What do you think of, I don't know if either of you have seen these, but they're really cool. If you go to windowfarms.org, it's an actual an aquaponic system where you're taking the plastic bottles that you're buying, hopefully not buying your water in, but so many of us do buy our water in them out. But it's a whole system where you connect these water bottles together, and it's almost using like the same type of filter system that an aquarium would use. And
right. Well,
salad greens and, right in your window. I mean,
yes,
people in
you
New
can.
York could do this in an apartment, you know.
That's aquaponics. And you can have a small goldfish bowl at your house, and you stream that nitrates from that water into that bowl and grow all kinds of vegetables. And if you have a grow light in your kitchen, you can produce food right in your own house. Just by what Anita just said.
Wow. And you know, they're doing that up here, and I know these people are at the market every Saturday. They're the ones that have the tilapia farms.
Yes, that's the Green Acres
actually,
Aquaponics, and they're wonderful girls. They have a full farm, and they just transferred over to koi instead of tilapia, but they do very well with their growing.
Well, what I did was I bought the romaine from them. When I went to the market, they had, like, huge, huge bunches of romaine. So I picked that up and brought it home and made a salad. And I thought, oh, my God, this stuff tastes like romaine I've never had before. It actually flavors.
When you have flavor in food, one of the things that we don't have in the grocery store is mineralized food. When you're growing mineralized food, there's a more heavier, denser, the color's more vivid, and the flavor is real. Your taste buds become alive. That's why there's a lot of people that are so into organic eating. It's not just because it's the right thing to do for your body, but you become very spoiled by it, and your tongue demands that again. Nothing will do after you have the best. You get spoiled very easily with organics.
Well, I've been getting very frustrated with, like, ordering salads in restaurants where I think I'm getting a Caesar salad with romaine or something, and I'm getting mostly iceberg lettuce, which to me tastes like chemicals.
Yeah, and it probably came all the way from California. Not sustainable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's super good that you're supporting the local farmers by going to the food, by the farmer's market. If you're buying locally, and that's within a 150-mile radius, they have different, others have different circumference, but if you're supporting your local farm, you're also supporting your health. Because by the time you track food across the United States or from a foreign country, you've lost a lot of mineralization. And, of course, you know, it's probably close to two to 3 weeks old by the time you get it. And that's even including lettuce.
Oh, yeah. And let me ask you this question, because I've had some real doubts about this. You know, buying that big old huge bag of soil, and it's usually called potting soil, and you're buying it from the dollar store or from, you know, a grocery store or Walmart, God forbid. But, you know, you're getting your huge bag of potting soil, bringing it home. What is missing out of that soil? What,
well,
if we wanted to use it, like, say, my partner and I wanted to use it for our garden, what do we need to add to it, or should we not be buying it at all?
Well, it, you know, a lot of the conventional soils that you buy in the store do not have the proper biology going on in the soil. And what I mean by that, the living force, that's a beneficial fungus and bacteria that actually creates life, helps seeds germinate, attach themselves to a root system, and really buffer pH and let absorption happen. A lot of times you have something they call sterilized soil. If it's sterilized, that means it's dead. There's no life force in it. So that's the problem of getting bagged soil. If it's truly composted, there should be a life form in it. And one of the indications of that is you'll smell that sweet earth smell. And if you smell that, then you know there is a life force in that bag. Another way is grabbing it into your hand, squeezing it tightly, and if it forms into your hand and you can see where your finger's indented, that's another indication of it's got good carbons and organic matter built in it.
We live, Beth, I don't think you do, but I know Dory and I do. We live in probably one of the more fertile areas of the state where the, you know, there's a lot of growing going on. But
down where I live, the soil is really, like, loamy. It's hard to get a lot of things to grow.
Yeah, because you're pretty much sandy soil. All of Tampa and Pinellas County pretty much is that way. And even the growing zone is different. The growing zone there, I think, is more of a 10, whereas north of Tampa, we're more like a 9A growing zone. And the dirt is just different because we're on that spine of Florida. They call it the spine. And everything else really is just basic sandbar. But, Dory, tell me what are some of the challenges of people like where Beth lives, mm-hmm. where the mm-hmm. soil just naturally in Florida is, in most places, sandy.
Yeah.
And
right.
What
and actually,
crops
it's,
be
yeah,
looking
it's,
at raising because yeah. they can't really do a lot of the other stuff that we can do?
Well, you have to remember we were underwater for many, many, many millions of years, Florida was. So we had the result of the bottom of the ocean. And, of course, you know, one thing with Florida, we still are an agricultural state, and we have to build our soils. A good thing about Florida, a very good thing, a lot of people don't realize, we have natural phosphates that live in our soil. These phosphates are one of the things that really are the lifeblood of plants. And we have something here that's called a colloidal phosphate that 30% of its calcium, 30, 20% calcium, 20% phosphorus, and it's just loaded with minerals. The problem that why we don't have the results in growing and we can't grow like they do in Michigan or Wisconsin, because they have the black rich soils there, is there hasn't been time for any type of a composting. And that would be the winters when the thatch dies down, the snow goes on, breaks everything down, and the cycle keeps happening year after year after year. I mean, 1 inch of soil takes Mother Nature 100 years to produce. So we have to do it here in our state. We have to get microbial activity involved, break down the soil, and start composting. Once we start composting or bring in humic matter into our soil, layer by layer, we can grow whatever we wish. And unfortunately, and this happens worldwide, from farmers and ranchers and golf courses, 180 million tons of nitrogen fertilizer every year it eventually runs into our precious groundwater, ponds, lake waterways, and ocean, causing red tide, algae bloom that kills aquatic life and causes pollution. If we were to be more sustainable and use these microbial inoculants, as I'm referring to, these methods would eliminate or slow the effects of mentioned contamination. So, you know, we have to stop looking at the bag and dumping fertilizer on. We have to consider what we're doing. Because we're killing our aquatic life, we're ruining our beautiful waterways with this indiscriminate use of dumpage of conventional fertilizers. My goal is to get it out there to everyone that is to replace our vital natural occurring microflora is not a hard thing to do. It's quite simple. And that would be is introducing a vermiculture. You can get a lot of the mushroom compost, composted manures, inoculants such as Green World Path produces and other companies like it, and include that in as part of your growing pattern. Be more conscious of growing organically. And this not only will be healthy for you, for whoever is growing their garden, but it'll also help improve our state and our water and stop contaminating our oceans, et cetera. Sorry, I don't mean to be long-winded about it, but it's something I'm very passionate about.
This is something that it's probably, you would probably consider it a simple question, but a lot of people don't understand what, you know, when they buy the soil and they set up their garden and all of that, what is the purpose of compost? What is compost supposed to do in addition to a good, healthy soil?
Well, a lot of times somebody will buy a bag of compost at the Home Depot or Walmart or wherever, and they'll put it down and they'll say, in a short amount of time, what happened to my soil? It was there and now it's sandy again. Well, if the particles are small enough, it leaches right into the groundwater and stays there. It separates. So what we want to do by composting is basically put a sponge, if you will, or a bowl that will hold the organic matter in. And that's one of the reasons that we want to compost. Plus, there's the bacteria. It's just teeming with microbial action. There's real energy in composting. Then you'll see more germination, better yields, less disease, because you're putting this living matter onto your bed of your plants and generating healthier yields.
And for those of you that don't know and aren't gardening yet, I would hope that that would change soon and that everybody will put in a garden or do vertical gardens or window farms or whatever, depending on your space. Josh has said, I've been told that you want your soil to smell like the woods. He said this in the chat room. So, like you had said before, Dori, when you open the bag, you should be getting that that aroma of a rich, earthy smell when you open that bag of soil. But I'm excited. I'm excited about compost. In fact, every day in my kitchen, any kind of scrap that I cannot recycle, some of it goes into a bag in my freezer, and I use that to make vegetable stock. And then other goes, and I make my own vegetable stock. I don't buy it. I'm learning how to make my own bread and, you know, just really going back to our grandmother's time and how they would cook food. That's how I'm doing it. And if it has chemicals in it, I don't buy it. If it's in a box, I generally don't buy it unless I'm checking the labels very carefully. No chemicals, no monosodium glutamate, no high fructose corn syrup, none of those added in. So really just trying to do it as basic as possible. And exactly what you said before, it tastes so much better. And once you have that taste, you don't want the other. You don't want the old way, the fake stuff. But the compost, we have a container for it. It's up by the sink. We throw the scraps in there that I'm not going to use for my stock. And we have a bin in the back. So everything gets thrown in the back, and the soil gets the compost gets turned regularly, so everything breaks down. Our coffee grounds actually go on, are repurposed and put on any of my bushes or plants that are flowering, like the roses, for instance. And I know there's a purpose, too, for eggshells.
That's the one thing I don't agree with, eggshells, because salmonella, it's very likely that salmonella could come from the eggs. So any kind of meat, any kind of protein like that, I don't encourage for composting. Some people do, and they'll swear by it. They'll say it's a calcium. However, because of pathogens. Another thing I'd like to mention, too, about composting, a lot of people, for example, I'm on the board with Arrow Community Garden, and one of the things is we have a great big compost pile. This compost pile is literally 8 foot tall, if not 10, and we have to turn it and with a large tractor. And we get so much energy built into that compost pile, it actually generates up 140 degrees temperature. So when you're building these types of compost, if you're even small ones, you have to turn them or you'll burn the energy out of the compost pile.
Wow. Okay. So on the small scale, it really just takes, you know, getting out there and just shoveling it and actually covering up the stuff that you want to break down.
You want to turn it. Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, too, when you see the little earthworms popping up, you know you're on the right track because you're germinating all that good microbiology into the soil.
Yeah, I've got worms back there, definitely.
Worms are good.
Yeah, worms are good. And of course, my other half, you know, wants to take those out and use them for fishing. And I said, of course, because we'll always have bait when you want to go.
That's right.
You want to go fishing.
That's sustainable, right there. That's a good. Yeah, you know, everybody gets used.
Yeah, right. No waste. The other thing too. There's a whole bunch of things going on in regards to seeds. So we can talk a little bit about Monsanto. And the International Day of Action, which is next Saturday on May 25th, this is happening globally, actually. There's marches in every major city about Monsanto taking over our food supply.
Yeah.
I'm reading a very enlightening book about the seeds and how they have slowly disappeared. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her, but she did a talk at St. Leo maybe about 6 months ago. Her name is Janice Ray, and she is a nature writer, but the most recent book that she wrote was called The Seed Underground. And I'm trying to find it. Yes, I'm actually looking it up on Facebook as I'm speaking. The Seed Underground, A Growing Revolution to Save Food. The book is about there is no despair in a seed. This is just a portion of the writing. There's only life waiting for the right conditions, sun and water, warmth and soil to be set free. Every day, millions upon millions of seeds lift their two green wings. At no time in our history have Americans been more obsessed with food. So she talks about how a lot of these seeds, these heirlooms, yes, and all of these things have slowly disappeared. And what she has done as a permaculture grower has sought out these farmers that are still working with the hybrid seeds and trying to resurrect some of these seeds so hybrid farmers and permaculturists like her can continue to grow these things that are almost fading. And she talked about how many seeds had actually disappeared, never to return. The plants are gone, the seeds are gone. So talk a little bit about that and how crucial it is that we do not have corporations.
Oh, indeed.
The rights
well,
to our supply.
Worldwide, there's, and it's usually women doing this, and are women over 40, if I could add that, such as Vandana Shiva in India and other groups out in Jamaica, the Frontier for Food. And there's so many different activists going on that are saving our seed sources and our heirlooms and protecting them and, for future generations. But one of the things that a lot of people don't realize this company, this Monsanto, who is all business, they consider these GMO seeds that they produce as intellectual property, and it's all about ownership, global marketing, and monopolization of our food source, which is huge and scary. When you have a large a corporation like this wanting to monopolize food, you really wonder what their agenda is. And I'm just talking fact. I'm not going into anything more than that. But people like ourselves, we challenge the safety of these genetically modified seeds, and we know that they're claiming they're harmful to our environment and our local farmers. And then one of the agendas with Monsanto is to keep these farmers in debt, be dependent on them, their suppliers, and to basically if they fall out of sorts or even use another type of seed after they've used their particular seeds, they feel that they're beholden to them and they're infringing, meaning Monsanto, and actually sue these farmers. I'm sure everybody's followed this in the press, but unfortunately, they're linking a lot of these GMO foods to all types of diseases springing up, including cancer, ADHD, different sorts of skin rashes, allergies of all sorts, et cetera. Just there's a whole laundry list of ailments that they believe are coming from these seeds. And wheat is one of the leading ones, the GMO wheat.
Yeah, there's been a rise in gluten allergies over the last few years. It's been reported.
Never in my life have I heard of all the, the celiac disease. And there's, it's almost overnight that these people are springing up with these. Their bodies have resisted this for so long. I know of one young lady that her teeth have rotted. She lost a tremendous amount of weight. They thought she had cancer, and then they found out that her body was not absorbing nutrients properly, all due to the fact of this intolerance of wheat.
And these other diseases, of course, us being over 40, all three of us that are on the line here, Beth, myself, and you, Dory, we know that when we were younger, these diseases that we're hearing about now, we didn't hear about back then.
Never.
They didn't exist.
We didn't hear about them at all.
Like Parkinson's and all these things. I didn't remember people with Alzheimer's. I remembered older people being a little confused, but I didn't remember the Alzheimer's. That's not confusion. And Parkinson's, I'm totally convinced, is a form of toxicity in the
probably.
Body.
I would not doubt it. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're saying that one in every two women will have cancer, one in every three men will have cancer. That's just way too high for me. I remember cancer was once something very far and few between. As a child growing up, really you never heard of that. Or if you did, it was in extreme cases. Now it just seems common.
Right, right. And of course, the expensive cures, which really don't cure at all. They might prolong life a little bit, but the therapies are more poisonous and toxic than the cancer itself. So,
oh my God, yes, chemo is the worst.
Yeah, chemo is chemo really is the killer most of the time, not the cancer. So, so we have to definitely be looking at our diets and how things are grown. And I can give you all an example in regards to young people. I do some nanny work, and the young people that I know, I don't know. I've never seen them cook a meal or make a sandwich, or everything's packaged, but especially the young one. The young one eats the sugary cereal in the morning, and I can see a difference in his behavior, his reactions. It's almost like an involuntary jerking movement that actually echoes in his voice, too. It's not just his body, but his voice doing that. And I thought, this kid is getting so much sugar and so much junk. I've looked at the labels, and it's all chemicals.
And probably GMO, most likely.
It's all GMO, but it scares me for that child. It scares me that they're eating that. So I, you know, after coming to this realization, walking into the store one day, I'm looking around and I'm going, these are food-like products. They're not, it's not really food. They're food-like products that they're selling.
Yes, quasi-food.
Yeah, and it's not real, and it's affecting our whole global population. Whoever's eating this stuff, it's affecting them. And these kids wouldn't know how to get food out of a garden if you told them. They wouldn't know. You know,
yeah,
they wouldn't.
I think they're just loaded with neurotoxins.
Yeah, it's horrible. So that's my recent experience with children, but definitely older people we're seeing, you know, the Alzheimer's, the Parkinson's, the unexplained diseases where there's really no cure because they really don't know how they've gotten them. But
kids, it's the ADHD and now autism also.
Yep. And I hate to say it, but autism is very it's very similar to Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it's extremely similar, but it's not affecting memory like it does with the elders. You know, it's affecting, you know, just social behaviors. So very, very scary thoughts to the trends that are coming up. So, now that we have discussed Monsanto, and everybody knows there's a big march in St. Petersburg, there's going to be a big march in Tampa. I looked at the Monsanto Facebook event, and it looks like over 1,000 people have RSVP'd. We are going to have Dr. Jill Stein there, who was the Green Party's presidential candidate in 2012, and she will be at the assembly area at 1 o'clock and probably speaking to the crowd and then participating in a small portion of the march so that's Saturday at 1 o'clock. But wherever you are, wherever you happen to be listening in, I'm sure wherever you are, there's a march in the nearest city. So I would encourage everybody to get involved, and we have to stop the corporations from taking over our food supply. So now let me ask a few questions about, Dory, about what's going on locally with the community garden that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yep, well, actually, tomorrow in Brooksville, Florida, off of 41, There's a community garden, and it's not a tiny garden. This is like five acres. It's a very, very well planned out garden with, we've got a load of different types of vegetables. And it's going to be a teaching place along with a educational, of course, community-pushed garden where we're inviting everyone in the Tampa Bay area to come and join us and be part of this. A very important movement as far as learning to take this experience in this community garden and take it home and do it in your own backyard. We're encouraging this. And on that five-acre parcel, of course, they're going to have their regular food groups, but we're also growing herbs, medicinal herbs. There'll be tea we're putting in, moringa trees, and different types of sustainable, local types of fruits that grow in abundance in our area, fruits and vegetables that will grow in our area. So we're not forcing anything. We'll just kind of go with the flow. And these are all heirloom, all sustainably grown using organic methods.
Now, what's the name of the garden?
Arrow Community Garden, and it's pushed by two doctors, Dr. Maria Scusiano of Access Healthcare and Dr. John Hill of Access Healthcare.
And I have been to the garden before when it was under, when it was under the old management, so I haven't been for some time, but I'm going to make it a point to get out there. And
And report back to everybody, because big changes. We have an actual beautiful tractor. There'll be two, almost houses there. One will be for training. The other will be for office space. The facility has bathrooms there, running water. I mean, it's not antiquated at all. It's a real farm. And then we have full-time people there working consistently on building this farm, irrigation, injector systems, proper dosaging of, and of course it's all, or like I said, organic methods of growing, using essential oils for pest control. It's really kind of cool.
And I've been out there basically when it was just started, so the fact that it's having all of this done, this is pretty amazing because it's happened in a very short time. I also wanted to mention that there are other community farms. There's Sweetwater, of course, in Tampa. Wherever you happen to live, you can seek these out. Most of these organic farms are networked in online. Pinellas County is doing quite a bit right now too.
There's a little website you can go to, localharvest.com, and it'll tell you your area if you want a sustainable, organic, grass-fed, livestock and that type of thing, or aquaponics. It'll tell you exactly where they're located, website, phone numbers, all that stuff.
Now, your specialty is pretty much mostly in tropical plants.
Well, that's where my training was. I was born in California, but Southwest Florida is really where I learned how to, my nursery woman, my certificate for horticulture was all in that area. So, of course, the first thing I would learn would be the tropicals. That's in specimen plants. But what I do now and have been for the last X amount of years, 5-6 years now, is consult large agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for sustainable growing.
Large farm in Brooksville that does quite a lot of growing and selling Beasley Farms. Are you familiar with them?
I am, and I'm also, there's DNS Blueberries. There's a sweet field farms out there. The aquaponics ladies, the Green Acre Aquaponics. There's a lot of sustainable farms now. And when I first started with this 5 years ago, there was one farm, and it was Beasley's and Frazier's. There was two. And they've got, well, there's C&J Farms off of Wisconsin. There are U-Pick situation. There's a load of farms now, not just hay fields.
Yeah, we did some picking just last week. Leon and I went and got, you know, several pounds of the beautiful blueberries, which I stuck most of them right in the freezer, so I'll have them for my oatmeal for the whole summer.
Oh, they're
so
wonderful.
Really,
and they're so sweet. Yeah, my brother has a large farm. It's called D&S Blueberries. That's out in Masaryktown, and he does a U-Pick as well. And he also is a grows produce for a local market. There's another farm, too, which is, what's the name of that one? Rabbits Etc. is another one I wanted to mention. The Blah has been there for years and years, and they have really great vermiculture you can purchase as well.
Do you encourage people watching things like the movie Dirt? Did you ever see that movie? It was pretty.
Oh, yeah.
as fun, too, for kids to watch, so they can get an idea of, you know, just dirt in general. And, of course, they're doing a lot of these movies, too, about, you know, sustainability regarding our water supply, which I think is a really big thing coming up in Florida, because it seems like, as you spoke about the fertilizers and the fertilizer runoff and just the literal saltwater immersion and so many other issues that we have here in Florida that really a lot of other states don't have. So our water supply, just to keep it clean, free and clear and clean, is extremely challenging.
Exactly.
And
our aquifer, it consistently becomes under scrutiny, and because of the indiscriminate use of fertilizers, pest control, herbicides, all these types of things, it does not disappear. When you flush prescription drugs down your toilet, that all winds up into our waters.
You're not supposed to do that at all.
And people do.
Illegal.
And you can't say it enough or hit the right people or try to get that consciousness going that, you know, we all are in this together and we all share this. And, you know, it's so beautiful and so crystal clear. We should insist on it staying that way and insist on being it and keep it, you know, try to get it pristine and clean again.
I know when I take things to the dump, they have, and I'm diabetic as well, so I have to take my Sharpies there. But when I go to the dump, they have a special receptacle just for needles, and then they have another receptacle just for old medication.
Mm.
And they keep
That's
it in a locked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they keep it in a locked area, so they have to physically open it up with the key and let you in. But of course, the Sharpies and all of that are kept in a. I keep those like in a plastic like milk jug or water bottle, and the same thing with the meds. I'll bring those in. If they're not in a water bottle, they're in the original bottle, and they'll just take the whole thing and drop it in there.
Yes, it's
and,
all hazardous
and then
material.
They lock it up.
Yes.
So that way it keeps it from being accidentally dumped into the water supply or for you having to dispose of it, and it ending up in the, you know, the landfill and then leaching into the
water. And it doesn't disappear when we flush it down the toilet. It doesn't disappear when you throw it in your garbage. It just is removed into another area, and unfortunately it's right back in your backyard. So, you know, you wind up drinking that, or your children do, or your grandchildren. So you are responsible for your medications and your needles and things like that, just as well as you are responsible for everything that you put into your lawn, because we are a community. Every time you put that key into your car and go to the grocery store, you're part of this community, and we're all responsible for each other.
Right, exactly. What do we need to do as a community? And I'm talking about all of Tampa Bay right now. Mm-hmm. We have all these different initiatives. How can we get linked in together? We have like the The Green Community by Eric Stewart over in Newport Richie.
Eric very well. And yeah, there's. I would, you know, tell everybody to go to Lisa Custer on Going Green Tampa Bay. That little lady, she gets everybody connected, and she ties everybody in. That is her whole being, is to do that. And she does a wonderful job with that. And she's always happy to help and get your name out there or tell a story about you. She's an amazing person. Anytime there's a benefit or something happened, there's Lisa. She's showing up to support it. She's a great person, and she's done a lot of great things for the Green Community.
She has a website, so that's, what is it, Going Green Tampa?
Tampa
and
Bay,
she,
yep. Going Green
yeah,
Tampa
Going
Bay.
Green, and she's on Twitter, too,
mm-hmm.
so you can connect with her either on Facebook or on her website or with Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a green, sustainable business, she'll get you listed on her website.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
she gets you started for free, gets you out there. I mean, a lot of people are struggling when they have a new business. Don't be shy to talk to her. She'll come out and do a story for you and get you going. And she's got a lot of good sponsors on top of it that help her move along and do what she does. And, of course, if you do have money, support her. Help her out and give some donations towards it or have her do an ad. You know, she does important work for us.
What else does Tampa Bay, as a general rule, I mean, Tampa Bay is so huge. We're talking about multi-counties here. We're talking
Everybody should grow their own gardens. Everybody should have a garden of their own. Don't depend on community garden. Don't depend on anything else. Grow your own food. Be responsible for your family and what they put in their mouth. It is not that difficult to grow your own food. And then once you start doing that, you will come across other like minds, and you'll look on, you know, your Facebook or different groups such as Going Green Tampa Bay, and you'll connect with them and get growing ideas. And people like myself, I consult, and then I don't charge for it. If it's local community, I give that out freely. So if you have gardening questions, that's what I do. I help you with that. If you're a farm, that's another story. But for you know, local backyards, that's, you know, I'm happily help out with that.
Now, we have some very sandy soil here where I am. So pretty much all the soil that we've had for gardening. I'm just putting this question out there because I'm sure a lot of other people would have the question. So I'm doing a lot of container gardening. And at one point, you know, I guess what I need to do is get, you know, organic soil, put it in the garden, and take these things as they're shooting, as they're sprouting, and take them out and put them in the soil. But what are some of the things that I can do through the summer to protect my plants so they're still producing in the fall? I know summertime is really hard for people because I always tell people we have three growing seasons in summer.
We do.
You know?
Yes. Well, of course, you have to grow the varieties that are can take our heat. So you have to go with the seasons, of course. And that would be right. And you want to get ready for fall. You would start your fall planting in August. You know, it's very hot. So when you ask what we do, well, I put mine under close to a pool area where they get that, it's a little bit chillier, and under oak trees. And you have to move it. It's a little bit more labor intensive, but at least you don't have to worry about losing your crop from the first frost. And if you have a shade house, it's even better. Luminette, if you can put that up, that blocks the sun, blocks the heat. Cools things off, but you get the bright light from it. It's a wonderful material.
Can you tell me what that is?
Luminette is what a professional growers use. I have one in particular. I'll say their name, Kissimmee Green Place, in outside of Orlando. They use the Luminette on their vertical growing systems, and I've seen a tremendous change in their whole farm, and they've actually can grow winter crops in the middle of summer because of Luminette. And that is, it keeps out the heat. keeps out the direct sun, but at the same time you get the bright light of the sun. So, you know, you can get, you know, the whole cycle going through with your plants from germination to harvest.
Is that what you see when you're actually going by some of the strawberry farms and,
yes,
and they're actually, but they've actually covered the plant?
Yeah, some of them are shade cloth and others are luminette. Luminette's a little pricey, but it's well worth having in Florida.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I know I've had extremely bad luck trying to keep anything alive, like after
yeah.
June, forget it.
Yes. And then, you know, of course, this time of year, it's okra and peppers and black-eyed peas and ligneous, that type of thing. But and sweet potatoes, all those things are popping up. But as August comes rolling around, at the end of August, I start doing my seedings. And that's where I put in my winters. And
how do you spell the luminette?
Oh, gosh, why are you asking me that? Let me see. A luminette is, I believe. Hold on for just a second. I'll give you the proper spelling.
That way we can try to find it.
Hold on for just a second, Anita. You hear my kittens carrying on over here? Somebody left kittens on the box in the rain. Can you imagine somebody doing that? And my daughter found them off the side of the road and picked them up, and now we have more cats around here.
Because Josh spelled it in the chat room, but he's not sure if it's right. L-U-M-A-N-E-T. And then, of course, I spelled it the French way, L-U-M-I-N-E-T-T-E. So
I think the French way is correct.
L-U-M-I-N-E-T-T-E. Okay.
That would be very
valuable to have over the summer, because nothing I've ever grown has ever stayed alive. It always just ends up dying, and of course, I throw my hands up in despair and go, I have to start all over again, you know, trying to grow.
No, there's ways around it, and if the large agriculture can do it, you certainly can. It's just a matter of, you know, yes, L-U-M-I-N-E-T-T-E.
Okay, got it. Yeah, that's, to me, that's the French way, and that's, you know, phonetically it would have been L-U-M-A-N-E-T. But anyway, there you go. So that'll help. And we're getting on to an hour of the show. Did you want to continue a little bit more? Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about? Because I was going to ask where you see the Tampa community as far as growers, Tampa Bay, growers, localism, movements like the transition movement. Where do you see all of this heading within 5 to 10 years? And where do you see yourself as a part of that?
It's exploding. Right now, I've never been busier as far as farms popping up everywhere. And the message is out. People want locally grown produce. They don't want it stretched across the United States that have an old produce. We see more of these types of stores that are crafters coming in, creating their own soaps, and essential oil companies popping up, and all kinds of great things, teas and coffees that are coming in green and roasted yourself. People are demanding it. It's already a big thing out west, and we're talking about in Oregon and in California, of course, and through the Cascades. And then we're finally getting that kind of consciousness here in Florida, where our local people, it's streaming into the restaurants, where the restaurants and chefs are demanding to go out and pick their own food. They want to know where their food source is coming from, or saying, I'm not eating that any Gulf shrimp that was up in the Apalachicola area because
right.
of we know what's going on there. And so the movements and the people, it's always the people in this grassroots movement saying, you know, I demand it this way. And how I am demanding it is by purchasing it or going to the smaller shops and farmers markets and purchasing them from them, staying out of the Walmarts and grocery stores. And,
I know for a fact that Burns Restaurant in Tampa has had their own urban vegetable garden that they rely on for years now.
That's amazing.
Burns might be a little pricey and all, but, you know, it's worth it to know what restaurants either buy local produce or have their own gardens that they take
now
from.
You're seeing places like Trader Joe's and local tiny small growers going into the urban areas, even down in the Harbor Place. You see these vertical stack systems going up and outside of restaurants where the chefs are going out and picking their own herbs. It's kind of cool. And I think it's all for the better. Is, you know, there's people that are more educated and demanding more, and it's happening all through. And it's not going away. In other words, it's snowballing.
I wanted to let everybody know that there is an article that I just posted. I posted the link in the comment underneath your promotion, Dory, on the blog Wise Women Media. At blogs.com, but also if people want to go directly to the link. It's Lost in the Bamboo Forest, all one word, .blogspot.com. And the posting on Sunday, May 5th, was Monsanto Planting Seeds of Death, Disease, and Despair. And it's a rather long article about the history of Monsanto and how they've kind of creeped into our food supply. And in addition to the article itself, there's pictures, there's videos, and it's extremely interesting and knowledgeable. I mean, whoever wrote this was very knowledgeable about Monsanto. So I would say check it out, lostinthebambooforest.blogspot.com, and it was the entry for May 5th of this year, all about Monsanto. So I'm kind of...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's just it. I want to know how they creeped in, how they took control, how they own almost all of the seeds. And another thing that book mentioned, that book by Janice Ray, The Seed Underground, she really gave big-time props to the people that are actually cataloging and saving seeds from their gardens. So I think that's next on the agenda. Monsanto's trying to say that that's illegal, but how are they going to enforce, you know, hundreds of thousands of people saving seeds from their garden? Do you have any ideas on that?
Well, they can. They can enforce that. And if the people do not listen to an outrageous law or trying to create an outrageous law, and just like the Boston Tea Party, you don't go with that. You use your common sense and say, this is my food. And it's for everybody. It's not a privilege. It's a privilege to eat, but it shouldn't be against the law to eat or collect a food that you already purchased. It's insane. So you know, don't listen to somebody saying you cannot save a seed. That's it's perversion.
And we already know, of course, about the seed bank that supposedly, I mean, I don't know if it's propaganda or it's true, but it was supposed to be.
No, there are two seed vaults in the world. One is in Norway.
Right.
I forget where in Norway it is. But the seeds have to be kept at a specific temperature.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
I've heard of that, too.
Yeah, other conditions have been met. And the other one is, I've heard, is in Syria.
I would like to mention this, too.
Because
of Monsanto in India, and I know this firsthand from distributors I work with out there, distributors meaning farmers who go out there and create farms, et cetera. But there is mass suicide in India. These poor farmers, they were so enslaved to Monsanto with crop failure on top of everything else. It was a shame, and for them, they couldn't face their families because they were basically, they couldn't feed them. So by the thousands, they've committed, well, 1,500 is what I know of, that have committed suicide. And that left a lot of widows behind to take care of the farm. Not a good scenario. So the UN has stepped up, knowing that a lot of women are the farmers of the world, and have endorsed the 100-day plan, which is to encourage women to become sustainable farmers and to grow their own food and create commerce. So
and this is why they're working so hard in third world countries to educate the women. So the women, even if the women leave their country and come to the States or Britain or somewhere else to get their education, they basically are setting themselves up to go back to their country.
A lot of them, yes.
Become the leaders and actually be able to lead others in these sustainable movements, including growing food and medical care and whatever else needs to be done in their country. Because let's face it, many of the men are also lost in wartime too.
Yes. Well, and one of the wars that are going on right now is food security war. They're in Algeria, well, all over the world. They're actually fighting for food because there's not enough. And what we take for granted here in the United States, and we think there's so much plenty, there is not. We are very deprived on food other places in the world. And it's the poorest of the poor are the one who struggle the hardest. Over a billion in 30 countries there's insufficient amount of food. So the world, the UN and different countries such as this are gathering together with urgency to try to build some more sustainability. And we're on the 11th hour if it's not too late to do so.
Yeah.
Between land grabs, overpopulation, more people, and climate change, we do not have enough food on planet Earth at this point.
And we have
eminent
domain,
too. Monsanto has taken advantage, because one of the big lies that they sell is that they can feed the world.
Right.
And they cannot. Exactly. That's their motto, and they have failed to do so.
Yeah, eminent domain is a way that our own government can actually land grab, you know, property and lands and farmlands from, you know, people that have had this land and property in their families for years.
And
so
they've already started doing it.
Right.
When they're growing by their fuel sources on this land, the soy and the corn, et cetera, for fuel or for grant money, this is not food that's produced for humans. This is just for naught. And also you have to consider the livestock on all the GMO corn that they're growing for our livestock as well. It is just it's just tremendous amount of waste that's going on.
Wow. So, Dory, where do you want to be in 5 or 10 years? Are you going to retire, or are you going to keep...
Oh, no. I'm far from retirement age still, but, and, you know, the way that everything is these days, women like us will have to probably work the rest of our lives. So my deal is to share information as openly as I can. I'd love to start something as they have in India called the Grandmother's University, which is aimed at both celebrating and validating the wisdom of women and grandmothers. You know, and people that are women over 40, like you said, Anita, they're forgotten. Well, I think that it's time for not to be forgotten and use this valuable resource, which is called grandmothers. And get them out there and share that wisdom and say to little kids that are eating sugar-laden GMO cereal, not on my watch, kiddo. That's going in the garbage. You're eating something healthy. And, you know, just in getting that out there and put the word out there, there is other ways of doing, and we have the resource because we remember the way it was.
Right, right. Yeah, they have the 13 indigenous grandmothers But that's more of a spiritual representation of crondom, I would call it.
Yes, but this is an actual university started by Vandana Shiva again, and
wow.
In India, and they actually have a university where people go to learn the wisdom of the women, and learn how to be a better mother, learn from their mistakes, learn how to if this person was in the corporate world, how to be a better corporate person. You know, we all have so much to share, and we do have resources that are valuable. And, don't put that to sleep, or don't put it away because you're retired. Share that.
Right, right. I wanted to give props to Josh for mentioning a great local restaurant that uses local produce, local meats, and meat from the area, and it's Pearl in the Grove.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
For anybody that wonders where that is, it's kind of between Dade City and Darby, which is just
old St. Joe's Road.
Yeah, St. Joe Road. It's a little bit, I would say, west of Dade City. So Pearl in the Grove, it's not that far off of I-75, and I pass by it every day, actually, on my way to my nanny job. They're only open Wednesday through Saturday, and then on Sunday they have a brunch.
Can I mention something about Pearl in the Grove? They're wonderful. The chef Curtis Bebe out there, he's the one who did a benefit for something I started in Hernando County called Hungry in Hernando, and that's a consortium of farms who, after their gleaning, we ask if they could give that instead of throwing it or dumping it, give it to the hungry folks in Hernando County. There's loads of them. And so he stepped up with Greenacre Aquaponics and the chef. They created a beautiful dinner, and the charity was Hungry in Hernando, and that was last week, believe it or not.
Tell us, I know you've been working with Hungry in Hernando for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that charity work and what mm-hmm. just regular citizens in Tampa Bay, what we can do to help.
This is the crux of it. It's a consortium of farms, Greenacre Aquaponics, and different farms that give their extra produce that they haven't sold. They don't want to take to market, but it's really still good. It's local, locally grown, and we'd love to have it when it's organic or sustainably grown. And then what we do in return, Hungry in Hernando networks it out to different charities and outreach groups, such as the Women's Shelter, which is Jericho Roads Mary's House, Jericho Roads Ministry, the seniors, the enrichment centers, and different church groups throughout Hernando County, and then Pay It Forward Farms. They all benefit from this locally grown produce because most of the people that are in between, we have a great deal of hungry people in this county that are in between the cracks, or they're seniors that can't afford fresh locally grown food. And then there it is that we're helping supply that. And it's been going, that charity's been going on for 3 years now. And it's kind of has a life force of its own, thanks to the goodness of the community pushing it along.
Wow. And Hernando County itself is supposed to be one of the poorest in Florida,
true.
Or is it the poorest?
It has been standing in fact, Florida is one of the poorest, has the most hungriest people in the United States. We have the statistics are high, and I was just looking at them, and the numbers, I don't like to say the numbers unless they're right in front of me, but Florida is one of the highest ones in the United States as far as poverty level and children going hungry, school-aged children not having enough to eat. And
we
a lot
have,
of times,
the worst governor. Where are all the jobs he promised? You know, we've got all these hungry people.
Well, the other points too, Beth, that a lot of people don't mention is very few people that are working people here in Florida don't and haven't for some time gotten a living wage.
Right.
Number one. And number two, we have a huge homeless population that lives down here because they don't have to worry about months and months of very bad cold weather.
A lot of them migrated down here from New York.
Right. So I'm sure that some of them go up north for, you know, the summertime, but when it's cold up north, they're all down here in Florida. So I think those numbers probably change things respectively, but here in Florida, we have to have very, very high statistics for people that
we
are...
We do. So we're one of the highest, absolutely.
With also the working poor
mm-hmm.
are working, getting up every day and going to work, but don't have enough
still,
money to pay.
Yeah, it's either pay the electric bill or, you know, your mortgage payment, or do you feed the kids? You know, do you keep the roof over your head or do you feed the kids? And it's what a quandary. And it should never be this way. It's a right to eat, not a privilege. I'll just mention this. Food stamps, everybody said, well, they'll be on food stamps. Okay, so each family's given $85 is a rough number per family of four for food stamps. And
not
to get
enough.
By is...
And you can only get...
I mean, there's
food,
only
food
exactly. So this is why we should all have our own gardens. We can do this.
Yeah.
We can just get rid of the grass. Forget about it. Grow your own gardens and vegetables and share with those who cannot do this for themselves. And once you learn how to do it, share that knowledge freely as well.
Like if one person is growing beans and radishes and squash, they can actually trade with another neighbor who's really got some great corn going or whatever.
Exactly, that's how our grandparents did it. And this is what really unites community, these types of things, is the sharing mode and bartering and that type of thing, instead of it's just really kind of zombie-like going to the grocery store. You don't say a word to anybody. You're angry when you're standing next to somebody in line just to get out again and repeat the cycle. When we're hands in the dirt, putting that seed into the earth, it's just almost a spiritual thing when you're harvesting that beautiful piece of a fruit or vegetable, and then the utmost part is when you start sharing it. And that's what creates the community, and that's which it actually is so much fun, and it's very rewarding, and you have peace from that.
Right, right. Well, I know that I've felt much better when I quit eating meat, when I put these things when I put the seeds in the ground and actually saw the results of my work. Another book that I wanted to give props to and mention was the book called The Next American Revolution by Grace Lee Boggs. And this woman is 97 years old. She wrote the book 2 years ago when she was 95.
That's a
long time, long-term activist in Detroit. One of the first degreed Chinese Americans in the United States, or PhD, I should say. And her husband, being black, he passed away. He was part of the whole movement for sustainable culture right there in Detroit. But they were activists, longtime activists together. So she says in her book, The Next American Revolution, that the most radical revolutionary thing that you can do is... plant your own food and grow your own
garden. Absolutely
agreed.
It's empowering, and it is a revolution. And everybody that does that and creates your own food is a form of rebellion for change.
Yeah, and she's just marvelous. I encourage everyone to get that book. You can get it on Kindle or you can get it on Amazon. The Next American Revolution by Grace Lee Boggs. That's Grace, L-E-E, last name, B-O-G-G-S. She's 7 years old, and I'd love to meet her. She must be one hell of a spitfire. And then the other one I mentioned earlier in the program was The Seed Underground by Janice Ray, and her name is spelled J-A-N-I-S-S-E, last name Ray, R-A-Y, an amazing nature author. And this book, The Seed Underground, is her latest offering.
Awesome.
And it's also available on Kindle or through Amazon. I do have the possibility of having Janice Ray on the show next week. It's not confirmed, but I'm hoping to get her on the program. And, of course, we have Dr. Jill Stein coming into town, the Green Party's presidential candidate in 2012, and hope to have her on the show. So one or the other of them are going to be on next week, I'm hoping. And if not, the other, I'll either have each of them on for an hour, or I'll have to put one of the interviews in the can and move it up to the next week. So lots and lots going on. Dori, what is next for you? What will you be working on? What's your next projects?
Well, right now, believe it or not, I'm getting into essential oils. I'm finding out the benefits and health benefits of essential oils. And I'm studying that rapidly, finding out that there is alternatives to it's amazing that with the right application, you can control diabetes, you can control heart disease and blood pressure issues and weight issues and all these things that happen to us as we, you know, age starts creeping in and beyond that. And I'm dealing with doctors with this and also certified herbalists, and finding out there's a whole new world out there with essentials. So I'm very actively approaching this at this time.
Yeah, and using tinctures. And, I mean, it's just, if you're taking supplements, because, you know, we know, you know, I know, Beth is on the line, she knows, with our healthcare conundrum in this country, We're not only going to be responsible for our own food and creating our own food, but we're going to be responsible for our own health care, too.
Absolutely. Especially, and we should be anyway. We should be responsible for that. It is our own bodies, correct?
Right. But so many baby boomers are aging now. And, you know, we don't. Big Pharma is just going to sell you a product when you have an ailment. They're going to sell you.
The other health problem that I've seen rapidly growing has been endocrine problems like thyroid problems and diabetes.
Right.
And I think a lot of that's related to the food supply, too.
Yeah, I can speak on the diabetes part since I'm diabetic myself, but I have a big question that nobody's been able to answer about that.
Diabetes, yes. Well, because of the toxins they're saying in our system, this is what I'm understanding, and they store in our fats, and it cannot be released from our fat because we use water-based medicines for it. Once you start using fat-based medicines with it, it can penetrate, and then there's your difference. And I'm not a doctor by any means. I'm only repeating what I just learned. And I'm finding it fascinating. Have I found it out to be so through myself? I don't have diabetes. However, I'd love to lose some weight. They have this certain amount of essentials that you can that actually do the same thing. It'll correct your weight. So we'll see what happens. I mean, ask me a couple months from now, and I can tell you even more. But right now, I'm learning, and I'm fascinated with it. There seems to be sparks of truth with it, so I'm going to go in that direction.
Right. I found in my own research with diabetes myself, is that I'm a veteran, and my question is, 25% of veterans have diabetes.
Yes, were you supposed to age in orange?
Only 8% of the general population have diabetes. And my question is, what the hell did we get while we were in the military with all those immunizations and shots?
Yeah. Could be.
And
when
I have
to think. In the military, especially when you were active duty and we went to boot camp, they really stress the carbohydrates and the carb diets.
That's true,
and
to fill you up
I think that's some of the problem. I think some of the problem is a lot of years of carb shock. But that's just my opinion. I'm not a medical doctor.
When I was in basic training, and I don't know if this is the case with everybody, but when I was in basic training, I knew that food was bad. But you don't really have a choice. That's all you've got. You can't eat
anything else. They carb you out in basic training.
But for me, it was 6 weeks of basic training. After that, I really didn't eat in the chow hall very much. But one of the things that I noticed as I went active duty back in the 80s, then they started to promote the salad bars in a lot of the chow halls. So salad bars were relatively a new thing at the time.
Yeah, but then they were also heating those with Monsonium glutenate.
True. Very true.
I remember that. Well, Anita, I have a call coming in to me from another country, so I have to get going. And this is usually what happens is on a Friday evening I start getting them, they start coming in, because this is when they're alive and well.
Dory, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and I want to thank Beth for popping in, too. It was just amazing to hear your take on things. We have so much more to discuss if we have you on for the second show.
Sure. I've enjoyed it greatly, and now I'm going to be listening and tuning in. I think this is an awesome idea.
And we need to talk about the Grandmother's University. I think that's something that some of us here in Florida might be able to work on.
I like this idea. I think so, too.
I think it's a worthwhile thing to actually put out in the air and maybe see how things manifest over the next year or two.
Fantastic.
But thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Have a great night, and we'll be thinking about you. And
again,
anybody
thank you for inviting me.
Anybody who needs to reach Dory, it's dorybon@gmail.com. That's dorybon@gmail.com. If you're local and you've got a growing question, hit her up with an email. And
I have the E in the center of that. I'll say it again. It's Dorybon. That's my maiden name, and I kept that. So, thanks, Anita. I appreciate that.
All right. And I'm going to just stay on the air for just a few more minutes and play a closing song. And, Beth, did you have anything else you needed to add?
No, I have to get to bed, actually. This is way past my bedtime.
All right, well, I'm going to close this out with a song by Shimshai, and it's called Mother of My Soul, and we'll see you all next week. I want to encourage everybody to get to our website, wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Hit us up with any kind of donation so we can pay the internet bill and stay online long enough to bring you a show every Friday night at 10 o'clock. So until next week, everybody, we're closing out with Shimshai, Mother of My Soul, and thank you for listening in to the Wise Women Media, the radio show. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Bye-bye. Lover of my soul, you
have given me all that I need to make me whole. Jaya Jagadambe, Jai Ma. 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 Mother of my soul to set me free. You have given me all that I need to help me see. Mother of love, lover of my soul, you have given me all that I need to make me whole. Mother of my soul, cleanse and let me see. You have given me all that I need to set me free. Mother of love, lover of my soul, you have given me all that I need to make me whole. Jaya Jagadambe, Jai Ma. 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 Hey Ma Durgaya, Hey Ma Durgaya, Amritananda Maya, Om Namah Shivaya. Kali Durgaya, Kali Jai Ma, Amritananda Maya, Om Namah Shivaya. Hey Ma Durgaya, Hey Ma Durgaya, Amritananda Maya, Om Namah Shivaya. Kali Durgaya, Kali Jai Ma, Amritananda Maya, Om Namah Shivaya. Ma Durgaya, Amritananda Maya, Om Namah Shivaya. Kali Durgaya, Kali Jai Ma, Amritananda Maya, Om Namah Shivaya. Hey Ma Durgaya, Hey Ma Durgaya, Amritananda Maya, Om Namah Shivaya. Kali Durgaya, Kali Jai Ma. Amritananda Maya, Om Namah Shivaya. Mother of my soul to set me free. You have given me all that I need to help me see. Mother of love, lover of my soul, you have given me all that I need to make me whole. Mother of my soul to set me free. You have given me all that I need to help me see. Mother of love, lover of my soul, you have given me all that I need to make me whole. Jaya Jagadambe, Jai Ma. 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 Jay, 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 Jay